80. Mongolian Death Worm.
"Business class lounge for air asshole," declared Inchmail enthusiastically, taking in the central area of the first floor of Big Ann's flat.
"Has the bedroom to match upstairs," Hollis told him. "I'll show you after I've had a shower."
Heidi put her axe handle down, still wrapped, on the counter beside Hollis's laptop.
"Olis!"
Odile stood at the head of the floating glass stair slabs in what Hollis supposed might be a very large hockey jersey.
"Bobby, you have found him?"
"Sort of. It's complicated. Come down and meet my friends."
Odile, in bare feet, descended the slabs.
"Reg Inchmail and Heidi Hyde, Odile Richard."
"Ça va? What is that?"
noticing the axe handle.
"A gift," said Hollis. "She hasn't found anyone to give it to yet. I have to shower."
She went upstairs. The blue ant figurine was where she'd left it, on the ledge, still poised for action. She undressed, checked herself for the rash that fortunately didn't seem to be there, and took a long, very thorough shower. What would Gareth and the old man be up to now, she wondered. Where had Tito gone after they'd dropped him off? Why was her purse, or Big End Scrambler at least, a foot on the street? What constituted the Mongolian death worm in her current situation? She didn't know. Had she just seen $100 million irradiated with 30-caliber pellets of medical cesium? She had, if Gareth had been telling the truth. Why would you do that? She was soaping herself down for the third time when it came to her. To make it impossible to launder. The cesium. It wouldn't come out in the wash. She hadn't even thought to ask him as he'd packed up to leave the studio. She hadn't asked him anything, really. She'd understood that he needed, absolutely, to be doing what he was doing. Doing it rather than talking about it. He'd been so utterly focused, checking things with a dosimeter, making sure nothing was left behind. She was certain she hadn't left her purse up there. Someone must have taken it from the van when she'd carried the duffel over to give it to the dustmen. She toweled off, dressed, checked to see that her passport was where she'd left it, then dried her hair. When she came back down, Inchmail was seated at one end of a 20-foot couch, its leather very nearly the color of the seats in Big End's Maybach, reading messages on his phone. Heidi and Odile were what felt like half a block of polished concrete away, taking in the view, darkness, and lights, like figures inserted into an architectural drawing to illustrate scale.
"You're Big End," he said, looking up from the phone.
"He's not my Big End. He'll be your Big End, though, if you sell him the rights to Hard to Be One for a car commercial."
"I can't do that, of course."
"For reasons of artistic integrity?"
"Because the three of us would have to agree. You, me, Heidi. We own the rights jointly, remember?"
"I say it's up to you," sitting beside him on the couch.
"And why is that?"
"Because you're still in the business, still have a stake."
"He wants you to write it."
"Write what?"
"The change to the lyrics."
"To turn it into a car jingle?"
"A theme, an anthem, of postmodern branding."
"Hard to Be One? Seriously?"
"He's texting me every half hour, wants to pin it down. He's the sort of man I could get sick to the back teeth of, actually."
She looked at him.
"Where's the Mongolian death worm?"
"What do you mean?"
"I don't know what I'm supposed to be most afraid of now. Do you? You used to tell me about the death worm when we were touring, how it was so deadly that there were scarcely any descriptions of it."
"Yes," he said. "It might spit venom or bolts of electricity," he smiled. "Or ichor," he said.
"And it hid in the dunes of Mongolia."
"Yes."
"So I adopted it, made it a sort of mascot for my anxiety. I imagined it as being bright red."
"They are bright red," said Inchmail. "Scarlet, eyeless, thick as a child's thigh."
"It became the shape I'd give to any major fear I couldn't quite get a handle on. In L.A. a day or two ago, the idea of Big End and his magazine that doesn't quite exist,
this level of weirdness he's nosed himself into and taken me with him that I can't even tell you about, that all felt like the death worm out there in the dunes. He looked at her.
It's good to see you.
Good to see you, Reg. But I'm still confused.
If you weren't these days, he said, you'd probably be psychotic. The worst really are full of passionate intensity now, aren't they?
But what strikes me is that you don't seem actually frightened now. Confused, but I don't feel the fear.
I've just seen someone, some people, she told him, tonight, do the single strangest thing I imagine I'll ever see.
Really?
He was suddenly grave.
I envy you. I thought it was going to be terrorism or crime in some more traditional sense, but it wasn't. I think that it was actually...
What?
A prank. A prank you'd have to be crazy to be able to afford.
You know, I'd love to know what that was, he said.
I know, but I've given my word once too often in this thing. I gave it to Big End, then gave it again to someone else. I'd tell you that I'll tell you eventually, but I can't, except that I might be able to, eventually. It depends. Understand?
Is that young Frenchwoman a lesbian? Asked Inchmail.
Why?
She seems physically attracted to Heidi.
I wouldn't say that that's any indication of lesbianism, particularly.
No.
Heidi constitutes a sort of gender preference unto herself, for some people, and lots of them are male.
He smiled. That's true. I'd forgotten.
A chord sounded.
The mothership, said Inchmail.
Hollis watched as Ollie Slight wheeled a tinkling, cloth-covered cart in. He was back in his expensive chimney-sweep outfit, she saw, but now was clean-shaven.
We weren't sure you'd have eaten, he said, and then to Hollis, Hubertus would like you to call him.
I'm still processing, she told him. Tomorrow.
You're serving breakfast, said Inchmail, hand coming down on Ollie's shoulder, cutting off any response to Hollis. If you're going to make a go of this and move up from being a Civil War reenactor... He flipped the lapel of the chimney-sweep suit. You're going to have to learn to stay on task.
I'm exhausted, she said. I have to sleep now. I'll call him tomorrow, Ollie.
She went upstairs. Dawn was well underway, lots of it, and there was nothing in sight that resembled a blind or drape. She got out of her jeans, climbed up on Big End's maglev bed, pulled the covers over her head, and fell asleep.